At 3:50 p.m. on the 28th of September 2016, the lights flickered in Parliament House. I didn't think anything of it until a rather white-faced energy minister came bursting into my office and said, "We're system black." I said, "What's system black?" He said, "There are no lights on in the whole of the state." So I looked outside and, true enough, there were no lights on. We have a generator in Parliament House, and so therefore we were quarantined from the impact of this. This moment caused the energy debate, as you'd imagine, to explode in South Australia.
Welcome to Understory. It's 3rd day of April 2019. I'm Elizabeth Poe. The federal election is weeks away, and budget aside, it's likely to pivot on the question of genuine action on climate change. Last night in Mandurah, another Climate Change and You forum was held. A few weeks ago, there was the student climate strike, and 2 weeks ago, former South Australian Premier Jay Weatherill came to Perth to share his insights about a decade of climate change politics that turned its back on an orderly transition to renewables. Jay Weatherill felt the sharp point of that day in 2016 when the lights went out in South Australia. Enthusiasts for the fossil fuel lobby seized on the event to blame the South Australian Labor government's determination to increase renewable energy supplies in that state and support action on climate change at the state level.
Now, South Australia back in 2002 had no renewable energy in the system, maybe a tiny little bit of hydroelectricity, so 0% renewable energy. As I stand here today, it's 50% renewable energy as part of our energy system. 2002, 2019. And I'd like to take all the credit for it, but it was actually my predecessor that began this journey. I was a planning minister in 2002, and we created a very permissive regime for wind farms. And we approved a very controversial wind farm on the edge of the metropolitan area with cabinet approval. So it was a big public debate. We argued the debate. We won the debate. But it sent out a very clear message to investors. This was a place that was friendly to renewable energy. Also, we established a renewable energy fund, a $20 million fund that would approve emerging technologies, geothermal, wave technologies, a whole range of different technologies, including investigations of what needed to happen to the grid to support the bringing on of wind resources, which were often in remote locations that were isolated from the transmission network. We also created a framework which put in place ambitious targets, so 20% renewable energy target by 2020, which we obviously overachieved on and have kept adjusting it. In fact, the latest one we committed to was 75%. We also took action to enshrine the first climate change legislation in the nation in South Australia. And we took international action. We participated on an international basis to be part of a group called the Climate Group, which is an international collaboration of regions and cities to take action on climate change. 75% of the action on climate change actually occurs in regions and cities. So the energy systems, the transport systems, the waste systems, the building technology system, the energy efficiency systems, all of those systems are critically important to taking action on climate change. And so cities and regions count. While these big international frameworks are important, a lot of the real work of action on climate change actually occurs at the subnational level.
You're listening to former South Australian Premier Jay Weatherill in Perth for the Citizens Climate Lobby Conference 2 weekends ago. He's speaking in a very different way than the justifications for inaction by successive state governments in Western Australia, including the current Labor government, who have punted on to the federal government most of the responsibility for preventing climate change. Jay Weatherill points to how innovative states like South Australia could make a material difference to global warming and facilitate renewable energy services, even when federal forces are antagonistic. The former Premier especially felt that antagonism back in September 2016 when the freak storm hit South Australia.
What it led to was all of the forces that were lining up around this political issue of climate change were then looking at South Australia that was taking action on climate change and then decided to channel all of their energies into trying to destroy our decision to take a leadership role. On the 28th of September, we had the system black event. So three tornadoes caused by a rare supercell cyclone ripped 23 transmission towers out of the ground in the state's mid-north. So we don't get wind gusts of over 250 kilometres an hour. We don't. That doesn't happen in South Australia. And in the Bureau of Meteorology, they haven't seen that before. But the power system disturbances set off a cascading series of events which led to the collapse of the power system. What happened immediately, though, is the federal government seized on this information to say that renewables were the cause of this blackout. We had, shamefully, also the ABC publishing on that night through Chris Uhlman the idea that the wind was blowing too strong, so that therefore the wind farms couldn't operate because the wind was blowing too strong, which was complete nonsense. But the status report that was sitting in front of me and in front of the Prime Minister warned them not to speculate on how it happened. There are processes in place which support a proper investigation. And then said the best evidence we have at the moment is this. Unprecedented damage to the network, bigger than any other event in Australia. 20 plus steel transmission towers down in the north of the state. The electricity network unable to cope with such a sudden large loss of generation at once. AEMO's advice is the generation mix, i.e. renewable or fossil fuel, was not to blame for yesterday's events. It was the loss of 1,000 megawatts of power in such a short space of time as the transmission lines fell over. That was the document sitting in front of the Prime Minister. Yet despite that, the Prime Minister was out there on the radio suggesting that we had set extremely aggressive, extremely unrealistic renewable energy targets. And Barnaby Joyce was out there saying wind power wasn't working too well last night because they had a blackout. So we had the nation's leader and the nation's deputy leader attacking South Australia for its leadership on renewable energy, which is mildly galling given that a few months before in the September election, he was standing up taking credit for our leadership in renewable energy when he was campaigning in seats that he thought that was important in, and claiming credit for it on the basis of saying it was largely driven by his own renewable federal renewable energy target. We started seeing all these things appearing on Twitter. Bring back coal to South Australia. This is bloody unacceptable to have a whole state sitting around in the dark. Aren't we a developed country? One clever person at BuzzFeed discovered that the photos all came from the same stock photos in a website. And they traced it back to none other than the Western Australian branch of the Chamber of Minerals and Energy. And when that was called out, those Twitter sites disappeared as soon as that was called out. This was what was actually going on at the time, and we were being hit from all angles on this.
Former South Australia Premier Jay Weatherill reflects on how renewable energy and climate change have been disrupted in Australia by politics.
This idea of action on climate change became, in a sense, the fulcrum of the political debate that was occurring in this nation. The point of the destruction of prime ministers and the changing of governments. Once an issue actually takes on that type of characteristic, it becomes part of the common sense or the folklore, if you like, about politics. It means that an issue that might be just one of a number of issues actually becomes radioactive and it carries its own particular mystique. Go new climate politics and, you know, you could die. And that is really infected, if you like, the political process ever from this day up to now. And indeed, you know, the political landscape is littered with the carcasses of politicians that lost their job for taking action on climate change or lost their job because they failed to take action on climate change. So you can see why people get nervous about this issue. It's a hot-button issue in the political context.
But the attack on renewable energy in South Australia was not yet over. Jay Weatherill.
A few other events occurred, a few other transmission events occurred, culminating in something that happened on the 8th of February, which was a heatwave. There was a heatwave that was coming across Australia, and we anticipated there would be difficulties. We were concerned, we thought there would be reserve shortfalls. We had a gas-fired generator that was sitting there in mothballs that could have been called on to generate. In fact, they were ready to switch on, and they contacted the Australian Energy Market Operator and they said, look, do you think we should, are you going to ask us to generate because we're going to need a few hours' notice? AEMO said, no, don't worry about it, all fine. And then finally they got themselves organised to call Pelican Point, but it was too late and there was a reserve shortfall. They then needed to black out load shed 30,000 homes. Inexplicably, the network operator blacked out 90,000 homes in South Australia, which almost caused another problem because too much power was taken out of the system. And ultimately, we then had another crisis. So after the statewide blackout, a series of other disturbances through transmission events, this event, and the forces were basically rounding on us to say South Australia can't keep the lights on. They are essentially a basket case. Now, just think about this for a moment. A small regional economy, we've just lost our car industry. We're struggling to attract new businesses and new investment into the state. And you essentially had, in the federal parliament, in question time, the Prime Minister of Australia and his Deputy Prime Minister casting doubt about South Australia as an investing location for the future. There can't be more devastating, chilling effect on inbound investment to say you can't keep the lights on. The very next day after this event, the current Prime Minister, the then Treasurer, walked into the parliament, so the 9th of February. That's where that image comes of him walking in with a lump of coal. So this was all directed at South Australia. Don't be scared, it's coal. He's handing that around in the federal parliament. Then something happened which completely changed the debate. On the 10th of February, this was a heatwave that made its way over to New South Wales. And the New South Wales system couldn't cope because the Liddell power station had essentially switched off because a lot of these old coal-fired power stations can't cope with the heat and the fact that they're ageing and they haven't been invested in. So that sudden loss of power led to a load-shedding event in New South Wales. They had the good fortune of being able to switch off their Tomago smelter, which meant that they didn't experience it in the same way as we did with households going out. But nevertheless, an identical load-shedding event, this time in New South Wales. All of a sudden, the debate changed. Instead of this being a South Australian phenomenon, this was now a national phenomenon. So the Prime Minister jumping in to do a quick knife job on South Australia for its perceived leadership in renewable energy now found himself the proud owner of a broken national electricity market. And really much of what has occurred since then has flowed from that. Soon after that, it became obvious as the consequences of really the inaction, failure to take action on climate change had a direct effect on the structure of the national electricity market. So there was an absence of investment in new generation. So we're seeing one coal-fired station after another, 12 closing in the last decade. This was beginning to affect the reserve capacity. So coal-rich New South Wales having load-shedding events. And now we've just seen more and more. This last summer, coal-rich Victoria load-shedding events and price increases in both of those states. So basically a national crisis, not a South Australian crisis. Of course, we then saw the Alan Finkel report, which made the obvious conclusion that all the uncertainty about not taking action on climate change has been the cause of the lack of investment in new generation. The lack of investment in new generation is causing this concentration of market power and also the instability of the network and therefore all of the particular crises that we're now facing. That essentially describes the status quo in relation to the energy market. Where we got to as a state was when it became obvious to us that the national electricity market was not going to change anytime soon. There was this policy inertia at a national level. the national energy market operator was not operating the system in a way that was protecting South Australia's interests. We decided to take matters into our own hand, and so we established our own energy plan.
Next week, Understory will bring you more of Jay Weatherill's talk at the Citizens Climate Lobby Conference in Perth, where the former Premier explains how Elon Musk's Tesla batteries gave South Australia not just further energy resilience, but international fame. The idea that fossil fuel companies and their peak council advocates are using fake Twitter accounts to undermine renewable energy is also something we plan to pursue, especially with a federal election coming up and the chance of disruption to democratic processes through well-funded fake news on social media. Join us then next week. I'm Elizabeth Poe. Thanks to Adrienne Glamorgan for bringing this story, and to you for tuning in each week or streaming us online. Just Google Understory blog on RTRFM. We'll be back, same time, same planet, when there'll be more to explore with Understory.